lifelong friends. Both need a little introduction. Now, a big thank you to Dave, who stepped in as a replacement for Ernie Davis at the last minute. Our good wishes go to Ernie, and we wish him a speedy recovery. Now, the areas we are going to discuss this evening are, first of all, family backgrounds. Secondly, growing up during the Second World War. And then we're going to finish up with a sprinkling of post-war, a brave new Millbourne port. Now, each section, hopefully, will last about 15 to 20 minutes, with an opportunity for questions at the end of each section. Now, unfortunately, we don't have time to chat about their school days. So hopefully, Dave and Mary will come back to enlighten us about Dave's adventures of peeing over the wall and also putting carbide in an inkwell. Yeah. Now, if you can't wait that long, you can always listen to Mary and Dave's school days as they are part of the oral history pages on our website. Now, I think it was Oscar Wilde who said, "Memory is the diary that we all carry about with us." And Cesar Pavese, the Italian novelist, said, "We do not remember days, we remember moments." As we were here, both Mary and Dave's families were, and still are, at the heart of the community. Records show that the Kings have been established in the village since about the 15th century. Mary worked up to her 80s, and chatting with her last week, Mary said that a good title for her autobiography would be "One Life is Not Enough." Now, Mary also told me that her late husband loved her for her unpredictability. Mm-hmm. So I think we're in for an exciting time this evening. So, lights, action. And I hope sound. Now, when I visited Mary last week, there was an interesting lamp on the mantelpiece, which is closely linked to her family. So can we go to the first slide?
Oh yes. Well, that's my grandfather, the second from the left, Harry Day. He is the man that had the contract to put the first piped water into Milton Port. I feel quite proud of that, because it must have been quite a turning point for the whole of the nation to have their own water in their own house instead of going to a well or a pump. And the lamp that Howard refers to is made of balls of wood, different sizes. We were going to bring it tonight, but we've forgotten, sorry. And each ball is a different size, and that was a different size of each pipe. The metal was in sheets, and it was folded around and sealed, and then the ball was pulled through so that the pipe was all the same size. I imagine, after all this time, that most of those pipes are now gone, because that was in about 1905. You'd have to search records to get the exact date, but I know that my grandparents were here in 1906.
Next slide, please, because I think we have another picture of Harry, don't we?
Oh, yes. Well, that's my grandfather, the man who put the water pipe in. He was also verger at the church. And some of my first memories are of following him around in the church. I remember very vividly, he used to stoke the boiler for the heat to church, which of course was coal. And he went down the steps, very steep steps, and disappeared into this black hole, saying to me, "Stay still at the top." I was only about 2 or 3 years old, And I remember being quite terrified, being left there alone when he disappeared in this black hole, and I wondered what monsters were going to get him.
And the heating worked.
It wouldn't get back to calm.
But he was a very gentle man, softly spoken and very gentle. And I followed him around. I remember him cutting the grass in the churchyard using a scythe. Well, of course, they've got mechanised things now, which makes it much quicker. But I think they have a whole team doing it now, whereas he did it on his own.
Now, Dave, I think you had a very interesting great-grandfather, didn't you?
My great-grandfather, yeah. One of us. Which one?
Ah, right, Lawrence.
Yeah, Lawrence was a soldier in the Crimean War.
Right.
Yeah, in the Marines.
Okay.
And he won quite a few medals for bravery, I suppose.
Yes.
And he was probably one of the most decorated soldiers around there, where it's, I would like to get out of his history, really. But
yes.
I haven't got it there.
Yeah.
To.
Yeah. Perhaps we'll have to go down to the Royal Marines Museum at Portsmouth.
Royal Marines Museum, I suppose.
Yeah.
And that picture came
out. And also, your grandfather, Charles' brother Frank.
He was an interesting guy, yeah.
Yes.
He joined up at 14 in the Dorsets in Sherborne.
Wow.
He was building Mary's house, actually. Then he left school, building Mary's house. Had enough of that. And so, of course, out of the family remembers, he pinched his mother's rent, ran to Sherborne, signed on in the army, thought better of the rent, brought it back. And went back again, and he was South Africa in the Boer War. He was in South Africa at 16, fighting the Boers. So, yeah. And he came out of there and went on in the First War.
Wow.
In the Great War, yeah.
And there was a story with a donkey?
Oh, a bullet went through it. I said, did you ever get hit with a wounded Uncle Frank? No, he said, but the nearest I got was a bullet went through his mule's nose and stuck in his knee. But it was spent, it didn't do that much damage. Yeah.
Right then, let's move on to the next slide. I'm going to start looking at parents.
Yes, but this picture is of my father. He was a gardener at Venn, and he got a hernia. And of course, in those days, if you couldn't work, you lost your job. So he had the operation for the hernia and lost his job at Venn. But when he recovered from that, he set up his own business. So he was a market gardener here in Milbourneport. And he tried to join the Navy during the war, but they refused him and told him to go home and grow some more onions. And the Ministry of Food issued a quota for him to grow food for this area. He specialised in chrysanthemums. I expect there may be one or two, but no, they're not many.
James are there.
Those ones there. David will remember.
Those ones there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, of course, we grew all the vegetables we could. We had our own garden at the back of the house. We had a greenhouse at the back of the shop that we had in South Street. And we had other gardens. We had the gardens at Crendle Court. We had the whole of East Lynne's Furlong, which ran from Coombe Hill right down to Wick Road. And the top half was all vegetable peas and carrots and beans, and the lower half was all potatoes. And it was great fun. When it was harvest time, we would hire the Shire horse and cart from Guppy's farm to bring the potato harvest in. And I remember my mother was ostracised at that time because she wore trousers to work in the field. And of course, ladies didn't wear trousers then. But the land girls wore trousers, and no one seemed to worry about that. But they didn't like my mum wearing them.
They were jealous.
Yeah. Why did he grow chrysanthemums?
Well, I don't know. Perhaps he just liked them, and he specialised in them. And he used to enter all the flower shows and vegetable shows around here, and eventually he got banned because he was winning everything. And they said that other people had to have a chance.
Now, didn't he also send chrysanthemums up to Covent Garden?
Yes, we did. And I had to take them to the station, Milbourneport Station, which
most of you will know, is quite away from Milverport. And I used to have an old pram and push the boxes of flowers out to the station to put on the train to go to Covent Garden, and vice versa. We also bought them from Covent Garden. I remember carnations particularly. And I remember packing the flowers in long, thin boxes, and each flower had to have a cushion under its head. And I remember making these cushions to put under the heads of the flowers, and they were laid in rows. It looked quite neat when it was done. But it was a bit frightening as a young child, having to walk out the station alone and put the things on the train. I don't think you'd let a 6 or 7 year old do that now.
Next slide, please.
Well, this was a very prestigious wedding in Milbourneport. April was here, and it was her mother's wedding, Queenie Southcombe. It must have been, I can't tell the exact date, I don't know if April can confirm it or not.
30th of July.
What year, April?
37, I think, Mary.
Well, I guessed 36, yeah, I knew it was round about then. But my father did the flowers for that wedding. You can see the bouquets for the bride were a lot much more flamboyant than they are nowadays. But there were quite a lot of bridesmaids. I think it was 14.
Good.
And they were...
I'm lucky for some.
13.
13, was it? Well, they were linked together with the garlands of flowers, and it ranged from pale pink right through to purple. It took my parents 3 days and nights to do the flowers. And I think that probably settled my father's reputation as a florist. But you can see it was a beautiful wedding. And you take note in the picture, you see the bride's walking on a carpet. That was a red carpet that was always put down for weddings for the bride. And I don't think they do that anymore.
Now, Dave, I believe your father was born at Gainsborough?
Yes, in Newtown.
Newtown.
48 Newtown.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you have any brothers and sisters?
Yeah, eight brothers and sisters.
Yeah. And your mother was at Milbourneport?
Yeah, she was a Melbourne girl, yeah. She was born in South Street.
Right.
Yeah, where we were all lived.
Right.
Yeah.
And what did your father do?
And there was a stationer.
Right.
In Abbey Bookshop in Sherborne, he worked always. And the RAF and came out and had a little shop in Cheap Street then.
Now, we're going to come back to your father in a moment because of the war.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's move on to our next slide.
I remember this. I remember being told to sit still. Because I think I must have been quite a precocious child. Some might say I still am. I remember being told to sit still, and the next door, this was outdoors, you see, in the world, the door, back door was open, and I was prone to standing up. There was a shelf there, and I wanted to know what was on the shelf, and I kept being told to sit still. And you could see I'm looking at someone, but the next door neighbour came down the garden, and she was there talking, and I was looking at her. There was a whole series of those photos, but I thought one was enough. Because there weren't many bathrooms around then. You can see we had a tin bath.
I've still got one if you want to borrow one.
Next slide, please.
Now, this is the first photo I remember, and I couldn't believe it myself. I was looking through old photos, and I picked that one up, and I thought, yeah, I remember that. I remember thinking, I must stay on the blanket because the grass is cold. And I remember vividly my father smoking there, and my aunt, I particularly loved her blouse. It was a gypsy style blouse. But looking, well, you can see how young I am there, and I wouldn't have believed it, although I can remember it. But I actually do. That was down in the avenue. And here is a picture of the avenue.
Yeah,
it was a very popular place, and we used to spend lots of time playing there as children, and families having picnics there, like we were in the previous picture. unfortunately, those trees are now gone. They were elm trees and they succumbed to the elm disease. And they've never been replanted as an avenue. But of course, they were part of the Venn estate. And a lot of the big houses had avenues like that either side of their house. In fact, the avenue itself ran the other side of Venn right out to Goatill Road at one time.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. But of course, Dave, there was also the avenue at Crackmore, wasn't there?
Yeah, down to Crackmore, but I remember when the Mary just said, one or two trees still there belonging to it. It ends up with that one.
Right.
Bends in the middle. That one carried on across the fields.
Oh, interesting.
Standing up at Goatill Road.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And there was also Toomer as well?
Sorry?
One at Toomer as well?
Well, Toomer Hill, the edges would be one each side.
Yeah, trees either side, wasn't it?
Yeah. I can just about remember that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just about.
I'd like a pound for every hour I spent under those trees. When we, as kids, were old enough, we used to walk down London Road, go up the avenue to the top, then turn left, and finish up at the top of East Hill, because there was a track at the top, and then come back into from East Hill, down the hill.
Yeah, a very popular place, wasn't it? Yeah. We spent a lot of time there. Well, this is just another early memory. It's my mother with me outside the church, with Grandad being the verger. Mum used to help Brian clean the church, and that is just a memory of that. Well, this is where I won the... I was the best baby in the show. And I
quite
remember
right too.
Being sat on that table to have the photograph taken. And Mum kept saying to me, hold on to the cup. Mm. And that was the only picture they got of me holding the cup. Because I was holding on to the table. And I didn't want to let it go because the table was very wobbly. And I was afraid of falling off. But that she did get one picture. Here we are. This is me with John and David King. Now, David couldn't hardly walk at that time, and he was crawling on the pavement. We grabbed hold of him, pulled him up, and propped him against the wall. Well, again, you can see how young we are. I don't know if David remembers it. Do you, Dave?
No.
Oh, John probably would. You can see he's looking quite worried. You're going to fall over.
Who took the photo?
My mum.
Your mum.
Now, my father was a market gardener and florist, but he was also a beekeeper. And this is just a picture of me. I used to love helping him with the bees. I couldn't do it now. And as you know, to these days, they wear hazmat suits and goggles and things. There I am helping him with no protection whatsoever. Very rarely got stung. But I remember when... if the bees were likely to swarm, Dad would sit in the garden with a hosepipe and spray this hosepipe like rain, so to bring the swarm down quickly. And also, I don't know if you know, but bees produce cells with princesses in. That not only they only have one queen in a hive, but if the queen looks a bit sickly or is old, they produce new ones, so they produce princess cells to make a new queen. And my father used to clip the wings of the queen so she wouldn't fly away and cause a swarm. Mm-hmm. A very delicate operation. He was also the only honey judge in the West Country at that time. And he also did a lot of research on bees, and he kept a row of hives up in the schoolmaster's garden up in Goatill Road, the first house as you go up London Road here and then turn left into Goatill Road. The house on the left, where Cilla Copper lives, was the headmaster's house. And Dad kept the row of bee hives there for his research. And a professor used to come down from Bristol University to glean the information, and he wrote a book. I meant to bring it tonight, and I've forgotten that too. It's called Swarming.
And it's a book written of my father's work on the bees, which beekeepers still use today.
How many hives did he have in total?
Well, we had six at the back of the house, and I think he had four research hives. But we had hives elsewhere as well, so I can't remember quite how many.
That's cool.
Are you able to hear me at the back?
Yeah. We know if it goes off again. We're testing. It's the first time we've used it. And it, if it goes off here, I don't know why it goes off here. Maybe it's when you don't speak for a while.
Well, I'll try and speak clearly.
You are speaking clearly. You are speaking
very clearly. And, I mean, what the honey was sold locally?
Oh, yes. We sold some in our shop, of course.
Right.
I remember people coming to the house to buy it as well.
Yeah.
And it was entered into shows as well.
And what happened to the wax?
Well, when you cut the, take the frames out of the hive, you cut what they call the capping off first. Because the shape of a cell is the bees do it in a special way. When it's filled with honey, it won't fall out. But if you turn the frame upside down, it will fall out. So you cut the capping off, put it into an extractor. I don't see any beekeepers here tonight, but and then you turn this handle and the centrifugal force, it spins the honey out. And I used to love watching it when it was a special day and everything would stop to collect the honey.
Splashing again.
Oh, look at
it. Splashing.
I think it's when the corridor goes over.
Is it?
Yeah.
Could be.
It's not done fine.
Is it working now?
No. Sorry, Mary. It needs to be done
fine. Can you hear me without the microphone?
Yes.
No. Yeah. Some people can't at the back.
Can I hold it?
It's gone completely now. Technical failure.
Oh, sorry, everyone. Well, I expect you'll get through it.
How about now?
No. Just put it to bed.
Well, I think it's time for our first questions. So, are there any questions from the audience?
Mm-hmm. Go on for David. You've got your Uncle Frank medal, have you?
Yeah. In the, yeah, I've got the whole Uncle Frank's. And all his, in South Africa, all the different Mappikin.
Oh yeah.
No, I can't remember the name of the Tukula boats.
Wow.
All the different campaigns, I suppose.
Yeah.
But when you think you're only 16.
Yes.
It's quite a feat.
It's unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I always thought you were quite a chap.
Yeah. And what happened to him after the First World War?
He came back, his wife died, he lived in Canada, he was a postman. And his wife died, and he came to live in our house in Say Street. And as an old man, he retired. And he married a lady from Millwall, Clara Burgess.
Oh, yes.
And that was bumping. He lived there in Kingsbury then. And so, as you end, Uncle Frank.
Wow.
But, quite a man.
Wow. Certainly was. In that case, can we move on to the war years?
How about now?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, the war years.
Well, the war years, yes, they are vivid memories, and I think David has vivid memories as well. We were, as you can see from the photo earlier, we have been friends ever since we were born, really. And he lived opposite me, and we used to do so much together, played together. We used to go over to the house on Saturday nights to have a bath and stay the night. First forerunner of sleepovers, I think. And we used to spend a lot of time in the fields and the woods. We knew all the plants. We knew exactly which were the poisonous ones we shouldn't touch. And we used to study the insects and play with birds falling out of the nest and try and help them back, which of course never worked. Also, we used to collect birds' eggs. And I remember David's brother, John, they had quite a collection. You remember, Dave?
Yeah, I did.
You wouldn't be allowed to do it now.
No.
But to see a whole collection of birds' eggs in those beautiful colours and patterns on the shells. We spent a lot of time in the river, didn't we?
But going back to the birds' eggs, I believe somebody lost their eye, didn't they?
That's right. There was a young man here in Melbourne Port, and again, it was probably through collecting eggs, wasn't it, Dave? Do you remember that?
Donald Rose, yeah.
Yeah, Donald Rose.
Well.
He went to collect a nest from an owl's nest. Well, of course, an owl can be quite vicious. And it attacked one boy and then attacked Donald, and he lost his eye. So he had a glass eye.
Remember it was.
Wow. I remember we were at school when that happened.
Yeah.
We were quite horrified by it.
Of course, this was the last time the...
This picture here is of me with the other little girl is the evacuee girl that was living with us. And the ice cream van used to come round from Wincanton. And that is the last time it came round at the start of the war. Because, of course, there wasn't much petrol. So they had to stop using it. And there we are, walking up the road with our ice creams. June and me. My father in the background. And notice the house is thatched. It was the last thatched house in South Street. Mum had it tiled when Dad died because of the insurance. And you see the coloured photo is June and me 50 years later, and we're still friends and still keep in touch now.
Where did June come from?
London, North London.
But I think Melbourne Port had evacuees from other places as well?
We had evacuees from several places, but I particularly remember from Southampton. They came by train from Southampton, and they were all taken to the council school, and people would go and collect a child or two children to take home to look after them. And when it got to the end, there was one little boy left. I can see him now, a thin little boy, very timid and in a little blue coat. No one seemed to want to take him home. But one of the ladies that was doing the administration, quite an elderly lady, she took him home with her, and he settled in with her, and he actually thrived, and he loved it here, and he became part of our gang, didn't he, Dave?
Yeah. And Spencer, you're
Morris,
talking about.
Yeah. And he didn't want to go home at the
That's
end of the war.
Yeah.
His mother wanted him home, but he didn't want to
yeah.
go. He did come back once afterwards that I saw him, but the old lady was quite old by then, and she died not long after, and I don't think he's been back since.
Dave, did you have evacuees as well?
Yes. Yeah, those of them actually, the Jewish family to start with, I remember. And then another family from Forest Gate, remember? Mm-hmm. It got bombed, and I remember she had an old bandage from a bombing in it. And they stayed with us all through the war. And my mum and, you know, were very friendly with them, but till they died.
Wow.
And they kept in touch.
Wow.
And they had a couple of children, David and Anne Rowland. Yeah, he went on to Cambridge, actually, from Church School. He passed his scholarship at Church School.
Mm-hmm.
Went on to college somewhere and on to Cambridge. And he's, you know, he's in the government for quite a big boy.
Oh.
Yeah, he's done quite well from the report.
Interesting.
Yeah, it started with.
Oh, yes. Well, at the start of the war, of course, they were worried about mustard gas. It had been used in the First World War to great destruction, and the nation was afraid of mustard gas being used again. So we were all issued with gas masks, which we had to carry to school and never be without them. Remember that day?
Yeah.
Your gas mask?
Yeah, of course you can, yeah.
Well, you see the picture on the left of a Mickey Mouse one. when you were tiny, you could have a Mickey Mouse one, and I remember having one. Like big black ears, I remember. But when you were five, you had to be transferred to the adult one, and I didn't like that at all. My first sister had just been born at that time. No, she wasn't born until 1943-4. But she had a gas mask, and you see the picture on the right. It was quite a big contraption, and you put the whole baby in it.
Oh.
And someone had to sit beside it and pump it to keep the air fresh inside. We had to hand them back at the end of the war. But I also remember we had to carry them all the time so that they'd be slung on our shoulders. And I remember a man here in Melbourne Forks coming down the hill from school, and a car came by, and the handle of the car caught in the string of his gas mask and dragged him along the road to Sampson's Hill. He was in hospital a very long time afterwards, and he limped for the rest of his life.
Oh.
And Les didn't, do you remember?
Mm-hmm. So in some ways it was an exciting time, but it was also fearful at the same time.
I think as children, yes, we were aware that it was a wartime. We knew we shouldn't talk to strangers or say things that we shouldn't. Of course, there were no signposts, no street lights. In fact, when they came back after the war, I thought they were all new inventions. And of course, there weren't headlights on cars. Not that there were many cars anyway, but that there was a light under the bonnet of the car to show, to light on the road, that there was no light showing above, because we weren't allowed to have lights. All windows had to be blacked out, so no light at all showed anywhere, because it would any German planes going overhead would see lights and know that that's somewhere they could bomb. So all lights had to be extinguished. In fact, you could be fined if you let any light out of your windows.
How often did the German bombers go over?
Well, I don't know, but I do remember the sound of the Messerschmitt.
You remember the sound?
Right. Don't forget it, do you?
No. My father used to come out of the road with his 303, a bit rifle. He was an home guard. And he used to watch me going over. Oh, they were watching by the searchlight, said, why he's still.
Right.
And of course, you pick him up, and the anti-aircraft guns would blast away. And my father would say, I remember him saying that the younger crowds kind of offer one, but we never knew it come down. But anyway, it used
to go
quite regular.
Yeah.
My mum, the fire used to go, didn't it? The siren would go.
Oh, the sound of the siren still sends chills through me. Yeah. When I see an old film, a war film, and they use a siren, it still goes through me. Yeah.
Used to get under the stairs. And then my brother and I, we used to get under the stairs or under the table. Under the oak table?
Yeah, well, we didn't have any stairs, so we were put under the table.
Yeah.
And I used to say to Mum, what's the point of putting me under the table? If a bomb drops, we'll still get blown up. And she said, yes, but if a bomb comes down somewhere else and our ceiling comes down, you'll be safe under the table and you won't have any spiders, because we had a thatch roof. So Mum was always afraid of the spiders and mice or things that might be in the thatch.
My man, you just hear that blacky siren going again.
It was loud, wasn't it?
So where was the siren in Melbourne Port?
In
Raymond's house,
in
the bottom of this hill here.
Oh, down the bottom here, Sampson's Hill.
Sampson's Hill. No, when we're
well, that was one. I think there was another
one
day.
Thomas House. Then on the fire station.
Oh, yeah.
The fire station used to be in there.
Right.
I think there was another one too.
I don't remember.
In another part of Melbourne, but they were very loud. Couldn't hear yourself think.
No.
I remember trying to turn the handle once, because the one at the house at the bottom of this hill, I remember going there, because I played with the girl there. And this siren was stood there, and we tried to turn the handle one day, but it was so stiff and so heavy, and of course you had to go faster and faster to make more and more noise. It was worse than being up in the belfry.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I think the wartime was quite exciting for children, especially when the Americans arrived here. You remember the Americans arriving?
Yeah, he's looking for us, yeah. Soldiers everywhere, tanks and
yeah, guns. Yeah, didn't know where all these men came from.
No.
And of course, one of the quite exciting things for us was they were black men with them, and we'd never seen black people before.
They were all down our way as well, down
yeah.
Stacey.
Well, because the black people and the white people from America didn't agree when they were fighting, they separated them. And they stationed the white soldiers around the outside of Melbourne Port, and the black people were in Melbourne.
Yeah.
And they were quite kind to us children, weren't they, Dave?
They didn't get on so well together.
No, no, they didn't. But the black people were very kind to us,
they
weren't
kind
they?
To us, yeah. They were all down that side of the road.
Yeah. I remember them building a swing for us in the woods, down the bottom of the
yeah.
South Street. And we used to go to the cookhouse too, didn't we?
Yeah.
And we used to queue up at the window, and they'd hand us out plates of chips or food. And they'd give you chewing gum and sweets and things. Of course, it weren't available here then. But what I was flabbergasted once, an American said, "Would you like some chewing gum?" "Well, what's chewing gum? Something you chew but you don't swallow?" You know, that didn't seem right. But anyway, yes, I got a bit of chewing gum. He didn't give me a piece or a packet. He gave me a whole box. I couldn't believe it. And I remember sweets with a hole in the middle, fruit sweets, a bit like the Polo Mints.
Can't remember that.
You can?
Remember a bar called O. Henry? It's a good bar, Mara's bar, but with nuts all in it. So.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And there was a sentry then on this lodge thing in the bottom of South Street.
Yeah.
He just stood on there because it was a car park, Larry Park.
Oh, was it?
And I asked him if he had any gum chum, and he said no. He said, "But I got some chewing backy." And you know, some chewing backy.
Yeah.
And he gave me some, of course, no toy as a kid.
Yeah.
Made me six a dog. Oh. Chewing backy. Yeah. So much for the chewing backy.
There was also showers down there, wasn't there?
Yes, well, we used to do. That was in the house. Bungalow next door to where my brother Alan lived, and I can't remember the name of the house, but it could well be here as
well.
People.
Yeah, Rick's here. He lives in the house where the American
showers used to be.
Showers were, but
there
were
six showers down through that. It was completely open inside, you know, no rooms or
no
showers. And we used to get in there with little lads, strip off, brought nothing of it. And have a shower. Marvellous, we've never seen showers.
I must say the girls didn't do it.
The black lads never took any notice, or there was a black chaps there who left them on, but nobody used to care much.
Wow.
And, yeah, you imagine that nowadays.
Yes, that's right.
But there was one occasion when June, this evacuee girl we saw earlier, we were down in that garden. I don't know if we'd gone to see the showers or what we were doing there, really. But because there were so many soldiers there, the sewage system wasn't working, and someone had opened the manhole, and it was full to the top with sewage. And as we walked past, June fell in. Fortunately, I grabbed her.
Oh, well done.
And pulled her out, and that was the only bit of her that wasn't covered in sewage. I managed her home. So, of course, we went home, and her mother wouldn't allow us indoors. We had to take her into the garden and hose her down with the hose pipe. She's never forgotten it.
And there were also the Black Watch here as well?
Yeah, in Crendon Court they were. At Crendon Court?
Yeah.
And the Cameron Olinders. We still got a cap badge. Cameron Olinders, yeah.
Yeah.
There's the march up.
Yeah.
Oh, we used to love seeing them march, didn't we, up to church. We could hear them coming because they were playing their bagpipes.
Band.
And we'd rush out to Weybridge to see them come up London Road.
There
they are outside of the newsagents.
They'd go to church, and we would, after church, they used to have brain gun carriers, like a small tank.
Yep.
Well, they used to give us a ride from outside the Chippy there.
Yeah.
Out to Crandall Court.
Wow.
Spin round in a row.
Wow.
Come back. The kids, yeah, in the brain gun car. Thought they were marvellous, obviously.
Incredible.
Yeah. I remember seeing them coming up the road with their bagpipes going.
Yeah.
Smart.
Yeah. And were they here the same time as the GIs?
Yeah. No.
No.
Down here before the GIs, before. There were a lot more of Buffs, the Kent, East Kent Regiment were there, and Campbell, Cameron, oh, there was quite a few there, different regiments at different times.
Right.
All ready for the D-Day landings.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Well, some of the Americans actually, but.
Yeah.
You know, they were there at a different time actually.
Right.
I can't remember that well, you know, where they were, but I remember that, that we used to enjoy a lot of the Murray Melbourne girls.
Yes. Yeah.
Jock Ross.
Yeah.
Parker, Bob Parker.
Yeah.
They were
George
in Scotland.
Jackson.
Yeah.
George Jackson.
Yeah, tended me George.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tommy Roberts, related to me, married one of my cousins.
Oh, yes.
Tommy Roberts at Union, married Newton.
Yeah.
There were quite a few married moving girls. Harry Seacomb used to be a Barney Steele, you know that?
Harry Seacomb?
He was in Arrow, he was in artillery on the,
really?
On the Yak-Ak, yeah.
Right.
I remember Dick Gear tried to get some, when he was doing the, either the college up the main town hall, up
yeah.
The new one, or he tried to get a donation from him. He didn't
right.
Do very well, but Dick Gear tried, wrote to Harry Seacomb since he, seeing that he was here during the war. He was a gunner up at Arnie Steele, and
wow.
Anti-air, you know, anti-air grabbed the artillery.
Yeah.
Harry Seacomb. You remember Harry Seacomb?
Yeah, I remember Harry Seacomb.
Tenor, yeah. To me.
And the goons.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in terms of the D-Day, actual build-up to D-Day, I suppose they were here one day and gone the next,
well, yeah,
weren't they?
Remember, they all went. Remember, people remember it.
Yeah.
We were so used to them. Anyway, so it seems like they were always
yeah,
here.
Yeah,
they were
always here, that's right.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden,
Nissan
had Nissan
hats
up
in Limerick Field, and they used to practice their marching in Cold Harbour because it's such a wide road there. I remember going up to watch them there. But and I remember my grandmother used to invite some of them in for Sunday afternoon tea. And one of them was so tall, he could just step straight over the gate. He didn't bother to open it. And he said, when they left, he said, he thanked her. And he said, one of these days, you'll see me coming up the road for tea again. But he got killed at D-Day, I'm afraid. But my grandmother wrote to his mother in America for some years after that.
Seems like most of the Americans who were in here did get killed on Omaha Beach.
Yeah.
They always were there.
Yeah, I think they did.
But where it was true, I don't know. But,
although
yeah, a story
some returned, not only did we have evacuees billeted on us, but we had commandos as well. And that's two commandos there, Peter and Tom. And I didn't know where they were going, but that was the day they left. I'm about five there, I think. We stayed friends with Peter, and he visited quite a lot right up to the time he died. We lost touch with Tom, but David was one of the last boys, the last group of boys to be called up.
The National Service.
Yeah, the National Service.
Yeah.
And you were stationed where, Dave?
I was at Oswestry. I just joined up at Oswestry in the Royal Artillery, and I got in trouble for not shaving. I forgot to shave.
Right.
Anyway, I got in front of the troop commander, and he wanted to know where I'd come from. I saw this colour sergeant stood behind him, with a red satchel on. And anyway, I got a good telling off. Went marched out, and he followed me, this Tom Gates. That happened to be Tom Gates, that lad there. He was at Mary's. This is 1959.
It's true.
And he was a colour sergeant. And so all these years after,
yeah.
He said, where do you come from? And, King, and I told him, Yo Wolf, because that's the
yeah.
Birthplace I heard of. Got a dope down in Melbourne Port, and he said, do you know where he cuts? Her father. And of course I said, well, I was born right opposite. And anyway, he gave me his address to give to Mary's mother, and they got back in touch. That's all out there.
Mm. What a small world.
After all the
yeah.
years, yeah, 1959, he was a 40 odd then.
Well, he must have spent the rest of his life in the army.
Yeah,
then.
Must have signed
yeah.
on. And
well, Peter
survived in landings.
Was shipwrecked on the way over to D-Day.
It's gone again.
And he. he managed to get ashore and climbed up the cliff to find he was on the Isle of Wight. So when he got sent back to this country, they promptly sent him off to Burma. So he had no respite, really. But he did survive it all, and as I say, he used to visit us quite a bit. And I didn't go up, but my mother and other members of the family used to go to Dundee, where he lived. But if he came down here, he always came down in his full regalia of kilt and sporran and dirk in his sock, because he knew I liked it so much. There's something about a man in uniform, isn't there? Oh, this is school friends during the war. There's David in the middle on his bike, his trike,
yeah.
And his brother John. John was more serious than David. David was quite mischievous and always seemed to be getting into trouble.
Yeah.
Right, Dave?
Yeah.
John was more serious, wasn't he?
Sorry?
I say John was more serious.
Yeah, he always a bit more serious than I happened to be, yeah.
And being older, I think he thought he knew more than us.
He was
the one in charge. And that's Margaret Greenstock and Mary Dicer,
who
became
Mary
Evans. Yeah. Again, my mum took the picture. She was quite into photography.
Who took it?
My mother.
But, she must have been the only one who had a camera, right?
Yes, I think she was.
we
couldn't get many films.
Written any photos of as much as kids because
no.
Never had a camera.
No, that's
she must
right.
Be the only one.
Yeah. Yeah, she was quite keen on it.
So, what happened on VE Day?
Well, that was quite a day, wasn't it, Dave?
Yeah, celebration.
We heard the noise, went out to have a look, and there were all these planes and gliders going over. The sky seemed... Actually, that picture we had didn't, to me, show what it looked like at the time.
The sky was full of them.
The sky seemed black, didn't it?
It was not that, but as far as you could see, each way in the sky.
Yeah.
And the whole ground trembled. I remember, they were planes and gliders. And whether it were D-Day or Arnhem, I don't really know, but they were coming from over the Queen's Head, as we say, and heading towards Sherborne Park, put it like that. So that direction.
So that sort of direction.
Yeah, going southwest.
Interesting.
So it was probably Normandy, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think it was D-Day.
As far as you could see, the noise.
Yeah.
God knows, only an honour to go over.
It seemed to go on for hours, didn't it?
Sorry?
It seemed to go on for hours.
Yeah, but they were just all in formation. But as far as you could see, you totally imagine it, as far as. Where have you looked in the sky, even? All in the nose.
Yeah.
The noise was. Ground trembled.
Yeah.
They weren't very high.
No.
No, they weren't.
You could nearly see the rivets in them, a couple of little feet. They weren't very high at all, for some reason. It was.
Experience you could never forget, really.
I never forget it, ever.
No.
I've seen so many aircraft, and the noise, but.
Yeah.
That was. I think it must have been either D-Day or Arnhem.
Right. And I also believe that that's Weymouth down the bottom.
That'd be Weymouth, yeah.
You visited Weymouth?
We went to Weymouth in 1947.
47, was it?
No, 46, I suppose. 46.
Yeah, when
46.
They opened up the beaches after the war.
Yeah.
The first time we saw the sea, look.
Right.
And I remember the coach, the old banger coach. If you would get up and watch, look over this hill, you would see the sea.
Yeah.
I remember we all crowded up the front.
Yeah.
Couldn't sleep for 3 days for excitement to see the sea. After seeing it in books.
Yeah.
And then actually seeing it.
Yeah.
But when we got there, it was one massive, the prom was full of tank trap things. You know?
Oh, yeah.
And the barbed wire on the beach were higher in the ceiling. And they just had one place to get through for the kids to get in the sea.
Wow.
One little place, yeah.
Yeah.
It was all still. But look, the barbed wire, the beach. But I remember we went the second time and there were an American boat, must have missed the harbour and shot up the beach. Quite a big boat, a frigate.
Yeah.
On, ran up the beach.
Strewn.
You sat on the beach in upon the sand, the tail of it in the water. And when we went again, there were quicksands there. Where had you been?
Right.
You were not in and stopped. So that, I suppose, with the suction.
Yeah.
And you couldn't Yeah, not go there. I remember it well.
Wow.
Yeah.
Time is moving on. So, are there any questions?
Just going back to the aeroplanes. The aeroplanes taking the gliders, aren't they? There's one aeroplane with engines, and then there's two or three gliders behind them.
There was a glider that came down here.
Yeah. One of their gliders actually broke his tow line. Right. Down it. Along the road between Trips and First Condo.
Oh, yes.
Near the road, just in the field on the left.
Yeah.
My brother and I went and got out there and got up in the thing.
Wow.
Horse a glider, yeah.
Yeah.
So them dogs were lucky, didn't they?
They certainly were. They certainly were.
They landed all right out in the field. But they were all gone, obviously. And
yeah.
I think there was somebody there, some soldier or somebody, or home guard or somebody. They let us up in it. The horse a glider.
Yeah.
John and I, your brother.
And you went to another crash, didn't you? The Spitfire that came down.
Oh yeah, at the top of, you was at the top of Tumor Hill.
Yeah.
Over the top of the Tumor Hill.
Mm-hmm.
The red brick cottages.
Yeah.
Just on the side. Well, it, see, it came over from this way, hit Elm Tree on the, running down to the farm there.
Mm-hmm.
Hit the top of that and landed in the, right in front of that cottage in the field. And I remember there was a massive hole there and still steaming.
Wow.
Smoking or whatever.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a bit fire there.
And the pilot was killed?
Yeah. It was killed. Yeah. I often think of it when they go past there.
Yeah.
You saw the edge.
Yeah.
By the corner is a field there, but by the, another few yards you would have hit that cottage, that red cottage.
Yeah.
Red brick place.
There's a hand up.
Yeah. Many years ago, I saw a magazine about the poker cubs that were operated by the Americans. One particular photograph showed a Piper Cub taking off at Milburn Port Advanced Landing site, and I wondered if you two knew where it was, because I can't find the same picture again. I'd love to see where it was.
That first place I would think about was Sigwell's.
Well, I was going to say Sigwell's is the only place I know.
I think
there
was some place you should land up on top of
your boat.
He's still that flat. Polo field,
on the polo field at East Hill?
Yeah, but over the top. That, they used to call it polo field?
Yeah.
My parents. I think they might have landed there.
Oh, interesting.
Big and flat enough for a plane to land there.
Yeah.
Well,
but
the searchlights were up there too.
Yeah.
They were enormous.
There was one of them down by the doctors in North Street. Searchlight.
Was there one?
I saw
the one
was
there.
Built. Oh, the old doctors where Harold
saw Sigwell was built.
Where Harriet used to live.
Sorry, somebody said.
I saw Sigwell's aerodrome built.
Did you,
John?
Yeah. My grandfather used to live at Sigwell's.
Oh, did he?
And he had to
Well, you've got some stories as well then.
Navy men and the Wrens lodged with them. They had they'd come for a year and then go on. One came from Bristol, one came from Reading, and I used to see the planes take off up from the runway up there when I was a child. They used to cross the road, go across and take off across the hill across Court and Denham. All the naval fighters, they were, the base was to protect Yeovilton. It was to protect Yeovilton aerodrome down there and also to protect Westlands.
Yes. Thank you, John.
So didn't we go to the aerodrome near Court and Denham one afternoon, coming back to Melbourne Port?
Yeah, that's Sigwell's.
That is Sigwell's.
Nice high point.
Yeah. We weren't there then, didn't we, Mary?
Mm. We did, didn't we, for a long time.
Yeah.
So where were the American spirited in Melbourne Port?
Everywhere. There were Nissen huts up in Limerick Field, where Limerick Close is.
Oh, yeah,
that was a field, and they built Nissen huts there, and there were a lot of soldiers stationed there, but they were in houses around as well.
Didn't they bomb the High Street Museum, the old museum?
Oh, yes, yes.
That last house in the, on the Ben Gates, they were in there. Just been a quarter, yeah, the last house is at Brook Street.
Next to the shower room.
Next to the shower room.
Yeah.
That's one's down.
Yeah.
A lot of
Americans at Hayden, and we were in the nearest country, weren't we?
Not at Hayden.
Not at Hayden.
Not at Hayden.
Not at Hayden.
Not at Hayden. Not at Hayden. Not at Hayden. Not at Hayden. Not at Hayden. Not at Hayden. Not at Hayden. Not at Hayden. Not at Hayden. Not at Hayden. Not at Hayden. Not at Hayden. Not at Hayden. Not at Hayden. Not at Hayden. Not at Hayden. Not at Hayden. Not at Hayden. Not at Hayden. Not at Hayden. Not at Hayden. Not at Hayden. Not at Hayden. Not at Hayden. Not at Hayden. Not at Hayden. Not at Hayden. Not at Hayden. Not at Hayden. Hayden that we were the nearest pub.
Yeah, well, yeah. They were all kinds of action in the pubs. Bobby Richards was a policeman, and he used to sort them out. You know, he's a fight in blacks and the white ones.
Right.
There's a fight. And then,
that's why they had to separate.
He would sort them out, Bobby.
There used to be a lot of
Bobby Woodlock's granddad. He was actually, young Woodlock was just smoking.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Just like his grandfather.
Wow. Sorry, John.
There used to be a lot of huts at out at the other side of Melbourne, Crandall Court.
Yeah.
They were split the white face of his.
Yes, I remember them out there, John.
Huts with a hollow wall with the same wall as I got up at my place.
There's
the hollow wall and they were out there and all the ones from Newcastle, they were down here, because the speaker last month should have said more about this. Tommy Brooks told me the story. They were a lot of northerners come down here to all the armies, and they were discharged from a train at Melbourne Port Station. And they walked into Melbourne Port, and the Queen's Head was open, so they discharged the soldiers for a half an hour break by the pub. And of course, they went in there, and old Mrs. Tittard was in charge of the Queen's Head in those days. And they had rough cider, and she tried to stop them drinking rough cider because that was the cheapest. And they said, no, we come from Newcastle, we drink anything. So they were drinking cider, and according to Tubby Brooks, half of them never made it to Crandall Court. So I got the better of them. But at the same time as that, or roughly, Harry Seacombe was one of them.
Yeah.
And Dr. Harriet Rhys Davies did write to Harry, and he did pay a £10 deposit to the
got a bit there.
Because he was here for a while in Melbourne Port.
They were interesting. One of my cousin in Newcastle, Brian King, you probably remember Brian King.
Yeah, I remember Brian King.
His older sister, Joan, married Geordie.
Married to Geordie.
George Hicks, yeah.
Interesting.
One of the soldiers.
Yeah.
Bringing more memories out, isn't it?
It certainly is. It certainly is. I think Tom's. One more question in the back there.
Yeah, hi, sorry, too short. We live in Brook Street, if you walk down South Street, the first long low cottage on the right-hand side. And during the war, somebody must have been stationed there, because about 40 years ago, I had a knock on the door, and there was this American guy, and he said, oh, I just remember this house so well, Mary, I remember. And he was just over the moon about it, and he was stationed there, or he lived there. And that was one of those experiences. Anyways, I never go around and see it. Of course, it can change a lot, but I enjoyed it immensely.
No, thank you.
Well, that's your house where the showers were.
Was it really?
Yeah.
That's why he remembers it so
well. He had a shower.
Where my friend fell in the manhole. Oh, in fact, I meant to ask you one day if the manhole's still there.
There is a manhole.
Don't keep the lid on.
Mary, is that you?
No. I don't think I ever look like that.
I was going to say you were very glamorous.
So.
Well, this is a group of girls I was at school with. I'm not in the photograph. I was home with ear trouble at the time. But I wanted to show you this because, you see, they're all wearing shorts.
Yeah.
And they are made of black material that was the curtains, the blackout curtains we had at school. After the war, I mean, things weren't available. And we used whatever we could get. And our teacher used the curtains to make our shorts. Sports. We also made them into bags. I remember embroidering a bag, which I still got somewhere. We put a saucer on, drew a circle of a saucer, and then did lazy daisy stitches in the brightest cottons and silks we could find that were available. It looked quite nice against that black material. We made quite a number of things with that.
So that was 1946. Now, I believe 1947 was very cold, wasn't it?
Yeah. I remember in the Aurora Borealis.
Yeah, the Northern Lights.
You could see them every night then.
Really?
Up in North Street.
Yeah.
Of the station.
Yeah.
And so that often you didn't take any notice of it.
No.
But it was so cold, everything was frozen up.
Yeah.
I remember, and when it thawed, how would it play? You know, the body places were leaking.
Yes.
You know. Harry Day had a good old day, mending the petrol and the pumps. But yeah, it was so cold.
Yeah. So plenty of time for sledging.
47.
Yeah, we used to go sledging up in Pullen's Ground, didn't we?
Yeah, remember it was so cold that when you woke up in your bedroom and the sheets were frozen.
Wow.
You couldn't be breathing. That's true.
Yeah.
Or your breath burning on the sheets. It was frozen.
Wow.
It was so cold. Indoors. Putting the fire downstairs to heat the whole house. And
you only had one fire?
Yeah, so heat the whole house.
Yeah.
Of course, it was so cold, you know, it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And Mary, remember it?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
so used to it, didn't know any different, really.
No.
One thing we used to do and try and keep warm, Mum used to wrap a brick and put it in under the fire in the ashes to warm it up.
Yeah.
And then it'd be wrapped in cloth and put in your bed as a hot water bottle.
Cold.
Yeah.
In fact, I do remember that once. Again, I was playing with June, the evacuee friend, and we were indoors and playing on the beds. And I forget what we were playing, but I just flopped down on the bed. And of course, I forgot there was a stone block at the bottom of the bed. Blood everywhere. I think my nose has never been quite right. Yeah, and then along the end of the war, we had a brilliant musician at the church here as organist and choir master. And he obviously ran the church choir, but he also set up a girls' choir here. Now, music is a passion of mine, and I was desperate to join the choir, but I wasn't allowed to join the church choir or the girls' choir until I was 12. We were quite famous in our way.
Remember?
In Melbourne Port.
Sinclair, Mr. Sinclair ran it.
And we used to do concerts here, and we'd travelled around doing concerts.
Yeah.
I remember one concert up near Salisbury, and the people that asked us to go and sing said, "Oh, you'll be all right, we'll send transport for you." And they turned up with a cattle lorry. We all had, in our lovely dresses, we had to pile into the back of the cattle lorry. That was a bumpy ride. But the height of our career was our trip to Germany. It was one of the first exchange visits to Germany after the war, which was quite a thing to do in 1953.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, everywhere was bombed. And we had a little bit of, we say not aggression. We didn't have any big trouble, but I remember fists being shaked at us. But we were placed in a refugee boys' home. That was 14 girls with several hundred boys, you know. So we caused quite a stir. But this is one place we sang at, and I did manage to get a photo. In fact, I do have a book that I wrote of our visit to Germany. But that is the most important picture. And the dresses we're wearing are made of white net. There wasn't any material available after the war. The only thing that the lady, Mrs. Craggs here in Melbourne Port, who became our dressmaker, the only material she could get was this white net. And actually, they were lovely dresses.
Yeah.
And we see the belts. We had black, they were very simple dresses, and the sleeves and the neckline were pulled up with black velvet ribbon, and we had a black velvet band around the middle. They were lovely. Later on, we had the other dresses that you saw when we were singing on the steps of Venn. We used to go down there singing
for fetes and concerts. But they weren't as nice as the net. They were green, yellow dresses with green velvet trim. But they were, again, not very good material. And the first time they were washed, all hems dropped. And the final dress we had was a dress we all made ourselves. And it was a Kingfisher poplin, a much nicer material. But unfortunately, we only sang in one concert with that dress. I haven't got that one. Of course, the church choir always used to be men and boys. Boys' voices being excellent. But of course, you could see a lot of the men in that picture are quite old. And as the men died off and weren't replaced, and the boys grew up or went to university or college or left here or went in national service, it gradually got that there were no boys. So Mr. Sinclair decided he would have girls, and he chose two girls. It was me and another one, Edna Luffman, who died recently. And we're there on the right-hand side. I'm second from the right, and Edna's third from the right. But that was in 1950. But in 1953, you can see there's a few more girls there, but they didn't stay. Edna and I stayed for a long time. In fact, I'm still there after 75 years. There were some good organisations here in Milverport for the youngsters, really. We had the Boys Brigade, the Girls Life Brigade. What were the youngsters called?
Brownies.
No, not the
Brownies.
They were Brownies and Guides, but what were the other boys? Oh, the Life Boys, weren't they? Life Boys and the Boys Brigade. They were a very important part of Milverport. And they used to do wonderful concerts at the Victoria Hall. Mm-hmm. And of course, all the important days at the churches or the events around the town, we would parade. And you see, here's a picture of a parade. And it was wonderful, the Boys Brigade Band. And we all loved falling in behind them and all trying to keep in step.
That's the Wessex Battalion.
It's the Wessex Battalion, is it?
Yeah.
50 years of the Dykes supporting the Boys Brigade in Milverport.
Mm, that's right.
Yeah, big do then. It must be 70 50 boys.
So what year was that then?
Oh, my upbringing, they were...
I can't remember the date, but...
That was a commemoration at the Methodist Church. Yeah. It was something to do with Tom Dyke, I believe.
Yeah, I was in the Lloyd Boys. Then you went in the Lloyd Boys.
That's right.
About 10. Then when you were about 14, 15, you went on up into the Boys Brigade.
Yeah.
I reckon there must have been 70 or 80 boys in the Boys Brigade.
Yeah.
It's a big thing.
So there was 70 or 80 in the Open Ball, was there?
It was a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The concerts each year that they did were fantastic, weren't they, in Victoria Hall?
Yeah,
the boys did.
The Boys Brigade display they used to
have. Yeah.
She trained for ages for it.
Leaping over the horse. A wooden horse,
I was in that band with a bugle on me.
Oh, you played the bugle, did you, Dave?
Yeah.
What about your brothers? What did they play?
John was in that picture.
Was he? John or a drummer?
Yeah, there he is.
Yeah,
he's a drummer, you see.
Right.
Yeah.
they took it very seriously. It was an important part of our lives.
Yeah.
Rose Warren Doig was captain of the U-Band. Dutch factory.
Yeah.
And Safecombe family might run it as well, the office.
Right.
It was a big deal.
Yeah.
All the boys, you had to be in the Boys Brigade.
Yes. Yeah.
In them days.
When they went off to camp, I remember it was very exciting.
Good,
we used to turn out
camps,
to see them all.
Oldowood, we went to. All over the place, but it was great fun in them days.
Interesting.
Yeah,
unfortunately, girls couldn't go on those things in those days. We missed out. I did go on a guide camp once, but that was quite much later.
But thinking back on it, we had a good upbringing.
Yes.
Fun, you know.
Yeah.
Because we didn't realise about people being killed in the war.
No.
It was all big deal, big good fun.
Yeah.
I suppose you can say our childhood was fairly carefree.
Indeed.
Wasn't it?
It was, yeah. Mm. They could walk across the fields without anybody shouting at you or anything like that. Any woods.
Yeah.
But I was very aware of the war, and I remember vividly reading the newspaper when they hung Mussolini up in Milan Square. And I remember when they first liberated the concentration camps and seeing the pictures in the newspaper.
That, yeah.
And if I see them on a television screen now, it still makes me feel sick.
Yeah, yeah. 63
again?
Yes.
Then most of us came down to the ground in the finish. Then the static torch went up, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And they met. Because that's quite opposite, we're very liberal. Oh, they were smack opposite to that.
Yes. Well, those icicles were quite
deadly,
actually.
Before it really started. Everybody's they went deep down a lot farther. And
yes.
When they melted a bit each day, it came up.
Yes, that's right, yes. As the sun came out in the day, it would melt a little bit, you see, and they drip.
Right.
And they gradually got longer and longer.
It's a photo of summer when it comes right up with us.
And you still got the thatch roof there?
Yeah. That's what boy, it's
that
like it.
That picture there was the last time it was thatched.
The last time it was thatched?
Yeah, it was the last,
thatched house in South Street. And that was the last time it was fully thatched.
Coming off there, look. That is coming off. Scaffold up.
That's right, yeah. But it looked lovely when it was done, but of course it was quite a liability having a thatched roof. Mum hated the 5th of November when people were out with fireworks and rockets in particular. She used to pace up and down on the pavement, making sure none fell on the roof. But when Dad died, she had it tiled.
That's what
Scaffold's
for. The what? Scaffold. Yeah, that was. I reckon
Mrs. Bowes had already
been
done
look, next door.
Yes,
they had done
it
for John. My brother John had the contract to do Mrs. Bowes next door. Look.
Well, he did
so
ours as well.
So they're changing from the thatch to the tile.
Because Mrs.
Yeah,
Bowes was thatch as well.
No.
Mrs.
I've got a set of pictures of when the tiles were put on.
Right.
In fact, I think I showed them to Natalie.
Yeah.
This is just a point of interest. As a lot of people won't know, that under the town hall, there is a chamber of water. And I believe it was in probably the First World War, the butcher here, Jackson, they stored their meat down there because it was so cold. The last time I saw it, it didn't look very safe, but I think that's quite an interesting picture. You've shown the dome, how it's built.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's a spring or where the water actually comes from, but it's still there.
Just put the lights on a moment. You put the lights on back there. Somebody please. Are there any final questions?
Where was Victoria Hall you talk about?
In North Street. You know where Limerick House is?
Yes.
And then the next building is what was Victoria Hall.
Oh, right.
It's flats now, isn't it?
It was
Parker's, wasn't it? It was the old Parker's, when I first moved here. Yes, that's right. Yeah. Before that, it was a hall.
It was a hall,
right. And not only did the Boys Brigade do wonderful concerts and the Girls Choir, but the soldiers used to during the war, amazing concerts. And of course, they had acts that we'd never seen. I particularly remember a xylophone. Didn't know what a xylophone was, and it was just amazing. And the magicians and the tricks that they would do. I remember a hypnotist coming once. Do you remember that, Dave?
Yeah, I remember it. Quite funny.
It was quite funny. Yes, I remember one boy, he was hypnotised, and the hypnotist asked him what his name was, and the name he gave was totally different to what we knew.
Yeah.
Huh?
It's quite funny.
Yeah,
I remember it well. That's where that search light was. Just then from the Harriet's house used to be. The gateway into the next door.
Yeah,
courtyard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
Bye. Now, I think that brings up the proposal shot. My big worry is we'd still be going at 10 o'clock, to be honest. Is it so absolutely fascinating? So, can we show our appreciation?